Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. Where the story goes, we follow. Chris Smith on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
My special guest this hour will be Johnny H., who's just produced a documentary as an independent journalist on the war between Ukraine and Russia, but a very different angle to that war, a heartbreaking angle that we'll talk about in just a short moment. And I'll also catch up with Lincoln Parker, a national security expert, about various issues, including the probable release of another 150 criminal detainees into the public domain of Australia. Yes, the same has happened last month. It's happening again. Just when police are working out how to surveil 150 legal illegals, they've got to do it for another 150. So 300 on the streets of Australia. How does that happen in a free, democratic and law-abiding nation like Australia? I don't get it. Just a couple of quick things. Several Palestinians fleeing the war in Gaza who were devastated after their visas were cancelled while en route to Australia, and I told you about the story on Thursday, have again been granted permission to travel to the country. What is happening? How can you get this so messed up? How can you go in one direction and give them a visa, go in the other direction and take their visas, and then in the next breath, give them back their visas? They either deserve to have visas or they don't. I don't get it. It's a move that's thrilled their advocates, as you can imagine. Russia Abbas, according to the Sydney Morning Herald, executive director of the Palestinian-Australian Relief Fund, said 8 of the 11 Palestinians her organisation was assisting had been told their visas were cancelled, but they've now been told they've been reinstated. We are delighted and happy that they are able to travel to Australia. I bet they are. We are working through booking the flights for them, and we will work with the government on the process for the remaining visa holders. We are relieved the government has reinstated some of the visas, not all of them, but the majority have been reinstated. Now, you can always bet the stuff up in these circumstances involving public servants based in Canberra. I bet you they handed out visas and they didn't give a stuff what backgrounds these people had. I bet you. I don't know, but I bet you. And then all of a sudden people are going, well, hang on, you've just given the go-ahead for 300 to jump on a plane and come to Australia. Have you checked their background? It might be handy to know who's coming into the country. I know those who love open borders say, who cares? But in times of terror, maybe those same people will think again. But here we have a situation where they've obviously gone back and done some due diligence, done some homework on who these people might be, what they got up to in their lives, which may determine whether they should come to Australia in the first place. I bet you that's the truth. And I'll keep across this story and get you the truth once it starts to out. A government source speaking on the condition of anonymity told the Herald that several visa cancellations had been reversed to allow Palestinians to travel onwards to Australia after checks were completed. That's an indication of what I'm saying. Visas were cancelled in cases where individuals had left Gaza without explanation or there had been a significant change in their circumstances, the source said. What does that mean? What does that even mean? Anyway, that's the update on that story we brought you on Thursday. Uber in Australia has agreed to pay $272 million to Australian taxi and hire car drivers, operators and licence holders to compensate them for losing income and licence values when the rideshare giant moved into the Australian market. Now, all of these standard transport carriers, as we knew them as, who've been pushed out of the market badly by Uber, they've been waiting for this for years. They were expecting this years ago. They've gone without the value of their license for so long. The class action against Uber was expected to go to trial in the Supreme Court of Victoria on Monday, but Judge Lisa Nichols vacated it after the rideshare giant agreed to the colossal settlement. It was the fifth largest class action settlement in Australian history and one of the most successful class actions against Uber, the lawyers behind the case said. Maurice Blackburn lawyers, Principal Michael Donnelly, said the settlement was preceded by a five-year legal battle. It went on for 5 years, would you believe it? In which Uber fought tooth and nail at every point along the way. But on the courtroom steps, and after years of refusing to do the right thing by those who say they harmed, Uber has blinked and thousands of everyday Australians joined together to stare down a global giant, Mr. Donnelly said. This case succeeded where so many others have failed. In Victoria, Queensland and Western Australia, cases were brought against governments and all of them failed. Mr. Donnelly said the settlement would put beyond any doubt that Uber had been held accountable. Well, some glee, some victory for those standard transport license holders, but boy, oh boy, it takes you 5 years for justice in this country. There is something terribly wrong with that. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
The facts, no spin or agenda.
Not enough with the lies, we need the facts.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, good to have your company. And if you'd like to jump on our talkback lines, you can do that. You can be part of the conversation. You won't wait long, I promise, from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. Or from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Or you can take part on our chat box, which you can find on tntradio.live. I'm just watching it right now. Plenty of comments about the Biden administration, which I'll get to a little bit later. Well, the Ukraine conflict continues to drag on. It's become somewhat of the forgotten war, hasn't it, really? And in the latest news, Ukraine launched 35 drone attacks against broad areas of Russia on Sunday, the final day of the country's presidential vote. At least four Ukrainian drones were downed while heading to Moscow in the early hours of Sunday, according to the Russians. The drone attacks on Russia have mostly been intercepted, but shelling of the Russian city of Belgorod, near the border with Ukraine, killed two people on Sunday, a teenager and a male. This terror campaign against Russia was never going to shift the election result. Nothing changed. Incumbent Vladimir Putin has overwhelmingly succeeded with his public support. 87% of the vote he won, 87%. My next guest will discuss the Ukraine conflict from his unique recent experience on the front lines, a place where many journalists do not choose to go. Jonny H is an Australian independent journalist. He spent 6 months in Donetsk and in February 2024 released a half-hour documentary titled Danil, A Hero from an Heroic City. Jonny H, welcome to TNT. Good to have you with us.
Good day, Chris. How are you?
Very, very well. Whereabouts in Australia are you at the moment?
I'm in the hills outside of Lismore.
Okay, on northern New South Wales. Okay. Why did you decide to use your independence as a journalist and head into Ukraine? And even worse, head into where the fighting takes place in the front line. Are you mad?
Some people say I'm a bit mad, yeah. But no, I've spent a lot of time in Ukraine and in Russia prior to the special military operation. And I was exposed to the truth. Like I was teaching and lecturing in Ukraine, and I was watching Nazi marches in the evening, sometimes 10, 15,000 people marching on the streets, Heil Hitler, Heil Bandera. Then I spent also a lot of time in Russia. And
before you talk about time in Russia, so these marches were taking place in which section of Ukraine?
Kiev.
Kiev, right.
Yeah.
And your time in Russia?
My time in Russia was all over Russia. I've been to Russia about five times prior to the special military operation. I've been to Siberia, to Moscow, St. Petersburg. Many places in Russia.
Your documentary, Danil, A Hero from a Heroic City, focused on the death of teenager Danil, whom you interviewed just 5 minutes before he suffered a fatal Himar rocket attack. I wanted to play a little bit of footage or a clip from this documentary. I've got two, in fact, but this first one is Danil in your documentary.
Danil has been under fire for 10 years, and the victims are Danil and his friends. the grandparents, the parents, the children, the teenagers. They are the victims.
Tell us a little bit about Danil.
Look, that was a very interesting story, what happened there, because it was Heimar arrivals in the center of Donetsk. It hit the Ministry of Welfare. So many people were... So I don't know if you know HIMARS. HIMARS are these rockets. They don't land in an angle. They fly and then they land straight down. You know what I mean? Like, they, you know, they're guided by GPS.
Right.
When the target is, they just land straight down. And they hit this building. And most of the people in the building were just social workers. You know, there were mostly ladies, because we saw when the bodies were pulled out, you know. And so we rushed to the site. I was just living probably about... kilometers the crow flies from the site. And what happens in Donetsk when there's disasters like this, there's groups of kids, they connect on Telegram, and kids, I mean the age of 15 to 18, they connect on Telegram and they come and help with the rescue, because they're very valuable. You know, they're young, they're nimble, they can get in amongst all the rubble, you know, and they help with basically, first of all, rescuing the injured, you know, or and then just the bodies too. So Danil was one of this one of these kids, you know, and then they sort of, they didn't finish their work, but they were just like, by the time I interviewed him already, there were so many, you know, firemen, you know, other rescues. So they were having a break, and I asked, I sort of knew some of their faces from other sites, so I asked him, is any of you willing to talk with me? So nobody wanted to talk, but he said, yeah, I'll talk with you, you know. So I did a short interview with him, and then another rocket came, and the anti-air got it. So I was just thinking, okay, what's happening here now? And I decided to split, you know. So I said to my cameraman, okay, let's split. And I started to run. There was for no other reason. I don't know. I just felt I need to run. And about 70 meters down the road, another rocket hit. And this time the anti-air didn't get it. And yeah, he was hit. He was actually instinctively just grabbed his girlfriend and lay over her. So he died, and his girlfriend did get shrapnel in the head. She has already had 5 operations, but she's going to be okay.
Oh, he you saved know? A life.
Yeah, he saved her life. I mean, they're 17, they're kids, you know, that... She was his first, they were their first love, you know, like puppy love, you know, that was the first love. So, and I actually didn't know that he died, because what happened with me is like, it was a total disaster. I mean, many people died in that rocket. So we just hid for about 10 minutes, and then we came back up, and there was a lot of dead. And I was filming, and I made a mistake. While I was filming, I was talking in English, you know, I just... And some of the guys just flipped out and on me, and they're just like, there's an enemy here, you know what I mean? Get lost. Just the heat of the moment, because there were so many dead people there. It's like, and I spoke English. There was a HIMARS rocket. So I just decided I'm going to bail out. They don't want me here. It's okay. I mean, I knew these people are going to give me a hug the next morning, but, you know, in the heat of the moment, too many of the colleagues are dead. I just split. And I didn't know who died, who didn't die. I didn't know that Danil died. But then news spread in all the Russian mainstream media that the family of Danil are looking for the Australian journalist who talked to their son just before he died, you know. So it was actually through the mainstream Russian media that one of my Russian friends said, hey, somebody's looking for you. It's in all over the media. So I went, I visited the family. I heard that he just, that his head was basically just cut in half, but he was in coma for a week, and then he passed away. And then I had this idea, look, the thing that touches me people most is personal stories. I mean, I was in Donetsk 6 months. I never filmed tanks. I never filmed artillery. I just filmed civilians, you know, like I wasn't there to go and make war a sexy thing, you know. Sometimes you see tanks moving and, you know, war movies with all I'm in my mid-60s, you know, the famous Vietnam War movies or World War II movies. Yeah. It makes war somehow appealing even for young men. You know, there's something heroic in it. So I decided, no, I'm just filming civilians. I'm filming what's happening to the civilians in Donetsk and other places in Donbass. So I thought, okay, I'm going to make a movie about him. I mean, all his family came to me. All his friends came to me. They invited me to the 40-day wake. Like in Orthodox Christianity, after 40 days, you all gather together. You know, it's basically be a big piss-up. You know, everybody gets drunk. And next day, everybody goes to the cemetery. And it was very interesting. I don't know if you saw the whole documentary, but when we were in the cemetery, we were shelled nonstop.
Really? You know? In the cemetery?
In the cemetery, and you can hear it. I mean, it's like grad. It was just coming in like grads. So grads come a dozen at a time. And they didn't hit exactly the cemetery, but in the vicinity, probably about a kilometer but away. So while we're having a wake for him and praying for him at the cemetery, they're still shelling all around. And yeah, so I decided, I'll make a piece about him. And I still, since then, I heard his family really appreciated it.
I bet they did. I've got to take a quick break. Johnny, okay. I've got to take a quick break. I want to come back. I want to play a little bit more from that documentary. I'll do so right after a break on TNT.
TNT's Mark Morano.
And there's a whole history of this idea that the establishment, the powers that be, the regime in power, likes the idea of a little eco-terrorism to keep the population hungry. I mean, if you think about it, their policies, government policies of the Great Reset, Net Zero, Climate Agenda, are quite literally eco-terrorism or a form of terrorism. It's, as Jesse Jackson used to say, it's economic violence, it's economic terrorism. Jesse Jackson used to say that about the Reagan administration. But in this case, it's the intentional collapse of energy, food, transportation, free speech, all to achieve and make us safer and give them more power under the auspices, if you will, of a crisis.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission. Unbiased information.
Honest and forthright.
News without the misinformation.
It doesn't matter what side you're from. What matters is what you say, the truthfulness behind it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Australian independent journalist Johnny H. has put together a documentary released earlier this year titled Danil, A Hero from an Heroic City, from, of course, the rubble of the Ukrainian-Russian war. Now, there's a little bit here I wanted to play in reference to what you have already described to us, Johnny, which is the HIMAR rocket attack, which killed Danil and several others. It hit, as you say, a social service building, not a military target. Have a look at this.
Total destruction at the center of Donetsk. We're waiting for some rescue to come here. We are still not clear, but there's people here under the rubble. People are yelling for help. Oh, here's one woman that just got out. People are stuck in the rubble. casualties, arriving some equipment here. The terror continues underneath. This is a terrorist campaign.
The twisted irony in all of this is that the HIMAR rocket is a US-built rocket raining down at a time when the US want to take the high moral ground, Johnny.
Yeah, it's that's one of the things I documented a lot. You know, I made sure I documented the serial numbers, you know, that where the rockets were made and stuff like this. And they are mostly from the US, from Czech Republic, from places like this. And you know, they're the defenders of democracy. What a load. I don't know. I don't want to say dirty words on radio, but what a load of crap, you know. It's if you don't mind me, Chris, saying something here, just
please do.
A tiny bit off topic. I've come back to Oz 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I've contacted every media organization in Australia, the ABC, SBS, Sky, everybody. So when I approached them, I said to them, I just come from the Ukraine-Russia war zone. Would you like to interview me? They say, yes, we must interview you. The moment they understand that I was in Donetsk, they cancel the engagement.
Really?
I've all of them. The other day, finally, ABC local in Lismore, they said, yes, we would like to do an interview with, because you're a local and stuff like this. We'd like to do an interview with you. So I went up to the ABC on the hill in Lismore, and I realized that the young girl that was going to interview me also didn't realize on which side of the conflict I was documenting, you know? And then I asked
her. So they expected you to be an unabashed Ukrainian sympathizer.
Yeah, exactly. And now look, I'm in my mid-60s, so I grew up, you know, with this, the Iron Curtain story, with James Bond movies, you know, Soviet Union is the enemy. But look, where is the Iron Curtain now? We are living in an Iron Curtain. Mm. No other news is allowed. I mean, I never asked them to agree with me. I just said, okay, I would like to present something. Okay, why let both sides of the stories be heard? Let the public make their own decision, you know? No, nobody wants to know. When I was in Donetsk, I wrote to everybody. I offered them my material for free. You know what I mean? Usually people sell this material, you know, I'm on the front line, you know, I'm risking my life. Nobody wanted to know. And even alternative media, like, I don't know if you're aware, there's a channel in Byron Bay called Bay FM.
Yep.
You know, and Bay FM, and everybody knows me here. I've been in this region for more than 40 years, like 44 years in this region. Everybody knows who I am, right? Now, it's too risky for them to have me online, you know? So, I mean, TNT Radio are the only ones, the only Australian media that agree. So
because there's two sides to the story, as you know only too well.
I mean, I know well, I've been in both countries, you know. It's like, I actually support Ukraine. I just don't support the Ukrainian regime. I don't support the Ukrainian regime that's destroying Ukraine. I have many dear friends in Ukraine. And let me tell you another thing. Everybody in Donetsk has relatives on the other side, and they talk with them every single day. You know, this war, this conflict is more complex than what people think it is, you know. And nobody is exposed to, I mean, people just know what they see on the ABC.
And exactly. And you must laugh. You must laugh when you hear this stuff, mainly out of the United States, about, oh, if we allow Putin to take Ukraine, he'll go into Western Europe. It'll be exactly like Hitler. These people don't know what they're talking about, do they?
They have no idea. First of all, let me tell you something about Russian politics. I've been to Russia quite a few times. I have many Russian friends. Putin in Russia is considered a dove. He's not a hawk. He's a dove.
Right.
A lot of Russians are pissed off with him because they think he should just like send one Kinzel into the Big Ben and just shut up all the voices and get on with life. You know,
yeah.
Putin doesn't want more territory. It took him 8 years to come and help Donbass, although they were begging him for 8 years, come and help us. He said, no, sort it out, sort it out. And then he went for the, you know, Minsk agreements. And then the talks in Turkey. And, you know, Russia wasn't going to get the Donbass after the talks in Turkey. But, you know, what's his name? Boris Johnson flew in to Kiev and said, don't agree.
Exactly. He called off peace. He called off peace, didn't he?
He called off peace, and actually Donetsk was going to stay in Ukraine.
Yeah. Can I ask you about the elections? His election victory, 87% approximately. It's obvious to everyone, bar those outside of Russia, that he does have the support internally. You know, a lot of people in the West will say, and I haven't seen it written yet, but I'm sure it's written somewhere, I just haven't seen it, that it was a phony election in Russia. You don't get 87% through a phony election.
Look, I didn't participate, but I covered the elections in September when the elections for the Duma.
Yep.
The Duma is the parliament. So it was the elections for the parliament, but all the other parliaments, you know, like we have New South Wales, Queensland, and things like this. So like for all the states. Look, I've been to the United States also many times. In the United States, you don't need to show an ID when you vote. You just go in, you can say whatever. You give a name and you vote.
Yeah.
In Russia, you have to show three forms of ID.
Three forms of ID. And the democracy in Australia says, oh, we can't possibly do that. We might discriminate against minority groups because they won't turn up to the polling booth. How ridiculous. There's more democracy in Russia than there is in Australia.
All, you know, I come from a family of journalists. I've traveled with my father all over the world. We were stationed in many places. I mean, the whole story of, I mean, the world is upside down now. You know what I mean? Of course, my father was from a democratic labor family. Now it's all turned upside down, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the left used to, the ones that are campaigning for human rights, for freedom. Now the left is dead. There's no left.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
they want to continue the conflict.
And look, I'll be honest with you. I've been... I'm this unusual journalist, and I've also been criticized by a lot of pro-Russian Western media that I'm not pro-Russian enough. But I'm an eyewitness journalist, so I also criticize Russia.
Yeah.
I've also had problem with the authorities in Russia, you know, and I never felt threatened. You know what I mean? I never felt they would kick me out. I never felt they would do anything to me, you know? But I feel more threatened sometimes in the West to voice opinion on certain issues, which I won't even say now on TNT, you know, because if I voice my opinion on certain issues, I would be excused about anything from, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Hey, Johnny, stay right there. I've got to go to a news break now. I want to come back. Just a couple more questions, if I could, just to ask you. I find this fascinating. Let's go to the newsroom, get a news update for you on TNT.
Now.
I've got news for you.
TNT Radio News.
News flash!
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Vladimir Putin looks set to extend his nearly quarter-century rule over Russia after winning this year's presidential election by a landslide. After severing ties with France, the West African nation of Niger is now ending all military cooperation with the US, effective immediately. And Finland says all options must remain on the table when it comes to sending NATO troops to Ukraine.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
There you go. There's your first question straight off the back of that news update. Here is Finland agreeing in the same way as France said 2 weeks ago, we should be putting NATO boots inside Ukraine. They are thick, aren't they, Johnny?
Look, I think somebody wants World War III, but it's not Russia.
I agree.
And I put all my reputation, everything on the line. It's not Russia. You know, Russia has one military base outside of Russia. The US has 860 military bases outside of the US. I mean, who is the expansionist? Russia doesn't need any more territory. Russia is not concerned with the West. Russia doesn't hate the West. I mean, now, since the SMO, they're starting to develop a little bit of negative feelings to the West. But before, I mean, I covered the Mondial, the World Cup in 2018. Mm-hmm. And I didn't cover the sport of it. I just covered the whole atmosphere. It felt that Russia was finally embraced by the West. But I think then that's when the West started to feel threatened, you know, because millions of Westerners went to Russia and saw that it's an incredible place, you know? Mm. I mean... I can give you thousands of examples. I went to Russia. I needed immediately a debit card so I can move money. I had my debit card delivered to my hotel room the next day. You know, I have to wait for my Commonwealth card 2 weeks, you know, to come. You know?
It's like, no, that'd be right. Australia to take 2 weeks to get your card.
I mean, people have this idea about Russia. Russia is a modern, forward-moving country. They're not concerned with the West. They have enough of everything, you know. Mm. And The West is obsessed by Russia.
Obsessed. Biden is obsessed. The Democrats are obsessed.
Because they have no other gig. They've built all the gig on hatred. They've built all their gig on an enemy. They've built all their gig on a military-industrial complex. And, you know, so Russia is like, so they lost the ISIS story. They lost all these other enemies. They needed another enemy. But, you know, this is a dangerous enemy, because if you really tickle this bear too much, we could face disaster, man. And, I've heard so many times in my lifetime, you know, it's the end of the world, World War is coming, whatever, Y2K, 2012, all kinds of stories. But this is the first time I feel that we are really on the edge.
I agree. Because,
I mean, we have somebody in Washington that can't think. No. I mean, can you imagine a sick wolf leading the pack of wolves? I mean, can we learn something from nature? I mean, how can it be that somebody that can't think is leading the biggest nuclear power in the world, you know? Regardless if you like Putin or if you don't like Putin.
Yeah, I agree.
You know that he's a capable man. I mean, you saw his conversation with Tucker. I mean, Putin didn't like that conversation because he felt Tucker didn't challenge him enough, but he can hold his thought.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He can hold his thought. He can have a conversation.
As opposed to the other bloke in Washington, you're exactly right. I want to ask you one more thing. When are you planning to go back to the area?
Very
or is
soon.
That enough?
No, very, very soon. I will be back next month, yeah. Wow. I have two other documentaries on the pipeline and I need more footage. I have... I have many commitments there, but I'm not going to go only to Donetsk. I'm invited now. I've sort of developed a little bit of a reputation now in Russia, so I've invited to many other places. And if you don't mind, can I share my YouTube channel where people can find
me? Please do. Well, yeah. Tell us not only the YouTube channel, but other sources where people can gravitate to see your work.
Okay, so... on Telegram, it's Cafe Revolution, and on YouTube, it's Cafe Revolution 9393. And the Russians told me, change the name, because the Russians don't like revolutions.
I bet they don't.
You know, eventually maybe the change will name, but it's too much of a story for me now to get onto this technicalities and things like this.
Leave it as it is. Leave it as it is.
Look, it was a really pleasure talking with you. I'm really into TNT radio because it's like, look, I'm willing to listen to hardcore, whatever, Nazis. Everybody has a right to speak, you know? Mm. And we can't speak, man. It's like we have no voice anymore, you know? If you don't walk with a woke agenda, you can't talk, you know?
You're cancelled,
totally cancelled, you know? It's like...
not here, Johnny, not here.
Yeah. No. TNT radio is great. I'm totally up for it. I've been telling all, I've actually been trying, I'll tell your producer and things like this, to make a connection between Russian media and TNT radio for an interview with them.
That'd be great. Johnny H., thank you so much for your time. And I hope my listeners and viewers can gravitate towards some of your work. Good luck with the documentary. It's called Danil, A Hero from a Heroic City. Johnny H., thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Australian independent journalist. Well, I want to take a break, and we'll do that. We'll come back and talk with Lincoln Parker, national security expert, right after the break. Plenty more to come. Do not go anywhere. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
I was such a young age. Everything changed. My name is Chloe. When I was 13, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. When I found out, I just didn't know how to react. I felt like everything was just kind of closing in on me. It just became a routine. Dad's doing chemo. I'd come home from school, wait for mum to finish work, and we'd go straight to the hospital, spend a few hours there, just draw. It was hard to navigate going to school, hundreds of kids, and I was the only one with a dying dad. He was diagnosed in March, and then he died in October. Towards the end, I heard about Canteen. It kind of felt nice to know that they had other people like me. They understood what I was going through and we didn't even have to chat about cancer. In 2020, I became a youth ambassador so I can help others the way they helped me. I've done so many things since I was 13. I've graduated high school, university, gotten my license, made a move across the country. Life now is just a whole lot more fun. Please give a gift today to support more young people like me experiencing cancer.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything. They're cold, they're dehydrated.
But remember, there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay. And around the world for any animal, any disaster. Search ifa.org/disaster ready.
You're with Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good to have your company. Big show, this one. We've still got plenty more to come. Just when police resources in Australia have been dedicated to surveil those 120 criminals released from detention earlier this year, well, police have now got a double headache because they may have to be surveilling 150 more. Pending current legal challenges over other immigration detainees, another large group of hardened criminals could be released into the community, bringing the total to as high as 300. To discuss this and other national security issues, I'm joined now by Lincoln Parker. Lincoln is chairman of the Liberal Party Defence and National Security Policy Branch. He's a regular Sky News contributor and has worked in national security in San Francisco, New York, Washington, D.C., and Sydney for over the last two decades. Lincoln Parker, welcome back to TNT.
G'day, Chris.
Now, explain to us how this happens and how the minister involved has not got a number 12 boot in his backside and is kicked from here to kingdom come to give an adult a chance to sort this out.
Well, that's the best question, I think, of the evening, Chris. Look, I don't think this Labor government and Prime Minister Albanese has any idea on what's going on with our national borders. And unfortunately, the Labor government has form in this area, and we've seen that over the last Labor governments where we get a slew of arrivals by sea on boats, and that's where we see deaths at sea occur. But now we're seeing up to, as you said, 300 hardened criminals being released into the Australian community. And actually what we're now hearing is that they don't really know the exact number. It could be anywhere north of 300 up to 400. Now, what to address your question, Chris, what is it going to take for this minister to either resign or preferably be sacked? Is it going to take some harm to an Australian citizen? And let's hope it's not anything more than just an injury. It could be worse.
Lincoln, it's a wonder it hasn't happened already.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, you know, the police forces, as you mentioned, are going to be stretched in trying to surveil and cover and look after these 300 or 400 hardened criminals. And, you know, if they just miss one and one of those criminals assaults an Australian citizen, well, what happens then?
The government has blood on its hands. Now, the minister we're talking about, correct me if I'm wrong, it's Adam Giles, who is in a position to make decisions based on what the court has decided, but refuses to even address it.
Well, he's no good at his job. He's clearly failing in his job. And if anybody else failed as badly as this person failed, then they'd be fired. But here we're talking about domestic and national security, and we're talking about the safety of Australian citizens. So he has failed. He needs to go. He should resign himself because, you know, he's endangering Australians. But surely the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, has to look at this and say, mate, you've really failed at your job. You're endangering Australian citizens. You've got no idea what's going on with your portfolio. You must go. And Australians deserve to have someone competent.
And as I said at the beginning of the hour, this drama involving the Palestinians who were given a visa, then taken the visa away, and now had the visa reinstated, some of them, is just a joke. Now, I'm blaming the stuff up here before the conspiracy. I think Giles and his department had not done any due diligence on those Palestinians, handed out the visas willy-nilly, and then realised, oops, has anyone checked that we're not bringing in a terrorist or a murderer or someone? We better check their antecedents, and then that's what they're doing, which is why some of them have got their visas back. Am I right with that theory?
Well, absolutely. The thing is, look, we are aware that the Labor government has provided at least 2,275 visas to Palestinians from Gaza. Now, these are the same Palestinians that voted for Hamas to be their rulers. Now, there's no way that the Australian government has had time to vet over 2,000, say 300, and maybe it's more now. There's no way they've had the time to vet all of those individuals that have just let them come into Australia, into our communities. And again, you know, why? Why are you letting in all of these people from Palestine? You know, why can't they go to Jordan or to...
Why is it our responsibility on the other side of the world?
I don't get it. I mean, it seems to be a Labor government thing. They're letting these people in who don't share Australian values.
So hang on, let's say it the way it is. This is the Labor federal government of Australia sucking up to their voters in key Labor constituencies to try and curry favour for the next election.
Indeed it is, that's correct. It just so happens that key ministers in Anthony Albanese's Labor government have big constituencies of Muslims. And so what they're doing is they're just willy-nilly letting in unvetted as many Palestinians as apply, it seems. And that is not good for Australia. It's not good for our communities. Everyone should be vetted. They should come in legally, and we should know exactly who is coming into the country. And we don't know that.
And this is why Giles should go as well, because he did hand out these visas. It would have had to have been signed off by the minister. He then pulled them and now has reinstated some of them because finally they realised, like, you know, everything had dawned on them that they didn't do the proper checks and balances on their backgrounds. Just incredible. I want to talk about the former Prime Minister, Paul Keating. He's been invited to meet China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, on his visit to Australia. I don't know. Paul Keating is so close to the Communist Party, I just wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him.
No, well, Paul Keating is on the payroll of the Chinese Communist Party and has sat on the Chinese-controlled Development Bank for a very long time. Look, at his heart, Paul Keating unfortunately represents a very large faction or a clique or a group, if you will, within the Labor Party, the left wing of the Labor Party, which is dominant. It's very powerful, and it includes Prime Minister Anthony Albanese as one of its members. They've always wanted to be more socialist, and they look at China as being the sort of the socialist dream when, you know, when in fact we all are aware that it isn't, and it's brutal and it's disgusting. And that's what they see for Australia. And, you know, what's upsetting to me is that they are also anti-American. They want to move away from the very country that saved our bacon and came to our aid, the only country that came to our aid in World War II, which, you know, was only 80 years ago, that without which we would not have a free, open and democratic country and be living the wonderful life that we're living now.
True.
And so they want to move away from that and move towards an authoritarian, thuggish, mafia-like regime like Chinese Communist Party. It just, you know, it beggars belief. And, you know, I really wish that the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese would not take any credence of what the former Prime Minister, Labor Prime Minister Paul Keating said or does.
And no wonder Paul Keating keeps rabbiting on about our AUKUS is terrible because it's a trilateral agreement with the US. How dare we keep close to the US? We should be keeping close to China. He's doing their bidding. It's so obvious.
He's doing their bidding. Look, this is just an unfortunate scenario for Australia's history where we have a federal government led by Anthony Albanese under the Labor Party that is, you know, forsaking our traditional values, forsaking our traditional allies. We're always known as Australians to be loyal, and it seems that we're kicking the United States in the guts who, I mean, look, after the last 80 years after World War II, they have kept an amazing peace around the world at their cost, which ironically is what has allowed China to become the economic and military beast that it has now become is based on that peace that America brought, and we seem to want to turn our backs on that.
Yeah, and I just feel as if the longer the Labor Party stays in, the more we denigrate and disintegrate that long-established relationship with the United States.
Yeah, and how are the Americans looking at this, particularly when we Australia's own military is in absolute pits of dire straits. We have more people leaving the Australian Defence Force than we have joining. We have a recruitment and retention crisis. We're already very small. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, is pulling more ships, more Australian Navy ships out of the water than he is putting in over the next 5 to 6 years. The promises he's made in public and all the big announcements that he's done with regard to defence are just that. They're these big announcements, the PR events. But if you look at, you know, actual numbers on the ground in the Australian Defence Force, we're actually losing people and we're losing ships before we are promised to gain any. And that isn't good if your number one duty as a prime minister is to keep our national security and our people safe. He's failing and he's just doing a con job on Australia. And at the same time, he's putting the middle finger up to our, you know, our biggest ally. It's crazy stuff.
It is. China's decided it's better to end the hastily imposed tariffs on our wine industry. Where are we up to in reference to that, Lincoln?
Well, so, you know, it seems that if Australia asks any questions about what China is doing or has done, whether it be with regard to the COVID virus, it would be useful for the world to know, you know, how that came about and whether it was a leak or what have you, in order to save millions of lives. It was the last Liberal Prime Minister that simply asked a question about the COVID virus to China, and they got so incensed by that that they started whacking all these tariffs on us,
yeah,
which are illegal against international law.
Such a bunch of sooks.
And so we then take them to the World Trade Organization. Before the World Trade Organization passes down a ruling, and it would obviously rule in Australia's favor because these are illegal tariffs. Well, China wants to make Albo look good. We've got the Foreign Minister Wang Yi here. He doesn't want the World Trade Organization to pass that down. In fact, what if Albo had any guts at all? He would continue to keep our request into the World Trade Organization to get that ruling in any case. Because it's not like this is the only time China has done it, nor will do it in the future.
They'll do it again.
And so now Albanese, Prime Minister Albanese, is trying to make it look as if, oh, China's this wonderful, beautiful country that's going to take off the tariffs on wine. Aren't they so wonderful? When, you know, ironically, it was them that whacked the illegal tariffs on in the first place and then get a WTO ruling against them. It's like some, you know, domestic violence situation where we're thanking the attacker for stop hitting us in the head.
We keep coming back for more. And, you know, I hope the wine growers of Australia understand that this is a very temperamental relationship we have, a temperamental marriage. They could turn on us at any moment. And I just hope that the wine industry keeps trying to source better markets elsewhere that can be more relied on than China.
We need to diversify away. Look, you said it. We have an abusive behavior relationship right now with China. And in fact, we'll always have that relationship with a Chinese Communist Party controlled China, because that is their MO. That is the way they operate. That is the way they have operated for 80 years. They have territorial disputes with every single one of their neighbors. That should tell you something about the likes of the Chinese Communist Party. And that's who our Prime Minister wants us to continue to deal with and continue to get battered, when we should be diversifying our trade.
Question without notice, just on AUKUS. And look, there's been a lot of stories this year on AUKUS being guaranteed if Donald Trump stays in, AUKUS not being guaranteed if Donald Trump gets in, AUKUS being under control because Congress is on our side, Congress is not on our side. I don't know where the hell AUKUS is up to. What do you expect to happen if Donald Trump comes to power, Lincoln?
I expect so. I am well acquainted with a number of national security experts that have worked in the previous Trump administration and will likely work in the future Donald Trump administration.
Right.
And I can tell you they are very clear-eyed, pragmatic, good people. Now, they will do what's best for the United States, but they'll also do what's best, they think, for their allies. I think AUKUS will continue, but they will be seriously fair dinkum with Australia. They will not take any BS. They will lay out on the card very plainly what it is they expect from Australia in order for us to get nuclear-powered submarines. And I absolutely think that we will get them under a Trump presidency.
Okay, that's interesting. That's good news. And I think at the very end of the day, if it adds to our defence force, which at the moment is fairly pop gun, I think it can only be a good thing, whether it applies to China or any other enemy in the future. Lincoln Parker, great to have you on the program. We'll talk again.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris.
No problem. Lincoln Parker, he's chairman of the Liberal Party Defence and National Security Policy Branch. He spent 20 years working in national security around the world in San Francisco, New York, Washington, D.C., and also in Sydney. It's good to have him on the program. Okay, I want to tell you about the latest information coming out of Queensland. It looks as if the Labor Party in Queensland is on its knees officially. Now, there's a story that I wanted to read to you from the Australian newspaper today, which sums it up perfectly. 7 months before Campbell Newman was tossed from office by angry Queensland voters, he called a press conference flanked by members of his cabinet and apologised. "I just want to say I'm sorry today if we have done things that have upset people," he said. "We will be doing a lot better in the future." Well, it's hard to fathom what the current Premier, Stephen Miles, might now say that would prevent a fate similar to Campbell Newman's 7 months before the next election, after Labor's vote collapsed in similar proportions at two by-elections and local government elections on Saturday. It was a wipeout. On Sunday, Miles acknowledged the result was clearly very bad. Not bad, very bad. And that voters were sending us a message. Miles doesn't have Campbell Newman's record majority to fall back on. To say his government is now in serious trouble is sugarcoating things, the way analysts tend to do to avoid making outright predictions. What Queensland Super Saturday of elections has demonstrated is the structural problem for a Labor Party that, particularly under Anastasia Palaszczuk, always sought safe ground in the middle of the road. The path to a state election feels like a narrowing goat track for Labor, with danger to the left and right. It's so true. But there's a lot of its time associated with this. They have been in for quite a significant time. Since 2015, it's a long time to be in government anywhere in Australia, whether it's federally or whether it's at the state level. And governments tire. And the worst thing they could have possibly done, the Labor Party in Queensland, is put Stephen Miles in charge, because they saw Stephen Miles as being connected by umbilical cord to Anastasia Palaszczuk. So all of a sudden, okay, you don't have Anastasia Palaszczuk, but you've got Anastasia Palaszczuk's lieutenant. And the lieutenant is in charge. And he's arrogant. He's not personable. They had other options that they could have pursued, but the Labor Party decided to keep with Stephen Miles, because the power existed in his faction. But they should have gone elsewhere. And now they've lost that opportunity. I think it's over. The Super Saturday was a message to the Labor Party. And I just get this feeling that the message has been sent loud and clear. And right now, there is no coming back. Absolutely no coming back whatsoever. Now, I do also want to indicate to you a couple of other things that has happened in politics. One in particular in the Liberal Party, and this doesn't look good for Anne Rustin. The dumping of a female Liberal heavyweight from South Australia's top Senate spot has reignited claims that the Liberal Party has a problem with women. Now, this is a story from The Guardian. They would be pointing out that the Liberal Party has a problem with women. They've been campaigning pretty strongly against the Liberal Party since their inception. The opposition shadow health minister, Anne Rustin, who I've always got on with, I thought she was rather capable, was relegated to second place on the party's South Australian Senate ticket on Saturday after failing to stave off a factional battle with Conservative Senator Alex Antic. Now, I don't think the Liberal Party could do bad by being behind Alex Antic. And if it is, you know, a choice between Antic and Rustin, well, either one would suffice for the Liberal Party. Either one will do the Liberal Party justice. But it looks as if Alex Antic is in prime spot. The backbench senator took out the ticket's top spot with 108 votes to Rustin's 98. So it was very close, with David Fawcett taking the third spot. The top three spots are believed to be winnable for the Liberals at the next federal election. So don't expect too much of Ann Ruston in future. And maybe this is the chance for Alex Antic, who I've got a great deal of respect for, to charge a federal Liberal Party for years to come. I think that's a fantastic result. I've run out of time. I will leave you in the capable hands of Sonia Poulton. We'll be going to London straight after this. Don't go anywhere. We'll come back and do it again at the same time tomorrow. This is Chris Smith on TNT.